Welcome to this week's Investors Chronicle Personal Finance Podcast. I'm Lenora Walters, and joining me today are Kate Bailey, Deputy Personal Finance Editor, and special guest Colin Lowe, Managing Director of Kingsfleet Wealth. Markets may be all over the place and property investors panicking, but bucking the trend are exchange-traded fund portfolios for income, which over the past few months have held up incredibly well. Kate, you've been looking at how our exchange-traded fund portfolios have been performing. So first of all, what kind of returns have they made?
Well, yeah, so we put these, they're basically two model portfolios, and we put them together with the help of Anna Miller and Paul Taylor a year ago in February. And so Alan Miller's is a kind of mix of, his is slightly higher risk than Paul Taylor's. It's a mix of overseas equities, it's got some bonds in it, and some UK equities as well. Paul Taylor's is more UK focused. So Alan Miller's is up, just, I looked at the 4 months basically since February, because that's when I last checked, and it's up by almost 12%. And you know, normally you wouldn't look at something on that short term a timescale, but that still seems quite kind of stark, and it's yielding about 1.3%. And these are ETF portfolios for income, but his thinking is that he would have he prefers to have accumulating units and sell those down rather than having distributing units. Paul Taylor's portfolio is up about 5.5 and yielding about 3.5. So it seems quite impressive. I was expecting them both to have been, you know, really hit by the Brexit effect, but that appears not to have happened here.
Yeah, no, I mean, those are super impressive numbers when you think about just all the things that have been going on the past few months. So my question is, what's been driving it? Is there any particular type of asset?
Yeah, there's definitely a trend, and that trend is emerging markets and it's bonds. I mean, emerging markets have been the thing to be in, I guess, post-Brexit for a number of reasons. I mean, it is Brexit related, but it's also a fundamental factor trade, I guess. I mean, there's the obvious reason that they are more insulated. I mean, here we're talking equities and bonds, but I guess to think of equities first, a bit more insulated from the UK and, you know, and from the immediate kind of shocks of Brexit. There's a currency thing there. If we're bringing back returns with weaker sterling, that flatters the returns for overseas equities. But there is also a kind of snapback, because everyone has been so down on emerging markets for the past few years. And in fact, they've been kind of buffeted by a number of headwinds, but they've really withstood some of those things quite well. So we've had, you know, low oil prices, and now those are rising, which is good. Falling commodity prices coming back a bit, also good. And the dollar weakening a little bit, which is also good for emerging markets. So in fact, people are looking at them and thinking, one of the cheaper areas in the world, and actually on a fundamental basis performing quite well. And when it comes to emerging market bonds, this is obviously one of the only areas, or bonds being, you know, the area to go for income in a low rate environment, and they have much higher yields. And some people are saying that in fact they do have much higher yields, but are not necessarily that much higher risk than some other areas of the bond market. I mean, others might disagree with that, and it does depend on which country you're looking at. But so that's why when you look at some of these ETFs, for example, Spider MSCI Emerging Markets Small Cap. Now, just over that period I looked at, over 4 months, it's almost 20% up, which is a lot, obviously. iShares Core Emerging Markets, IMI, and that's an ETF which tracks emerging markets. It tracks the whole universe, so that includes some small cap as well. That's up by almost 24%. And then emerging market bonds, in Alan Miller's portfolio, he holds PIMCO Emerging Markets Advantage Local Bond Index Source UCITS ETF, another catchy name, almost 25% up. So I guess, you know, there are questions about whether those things can keep going up. But for now and post-Brexit, that has clearly been the place to be.
Yeah, some incredible returns. Now, the two wealth managers who constructed the portfolios did recently change some of the holdings, though. Which ETFs did they add to the portfolios?
So Alan Miller wanted to switch his allocation from global iShares global high yield corporate bond, and he wanted to move that into an emerging markets sovereign bond hedged back to GBP. And that's because he's a bit nervous about high yield generally and actually thinks that the yields are pretty comparable between this emerging market sovereign debt ETF and the high yield. And he just feels better about the risk. So that's one move. Also switching his Japanese exposure from a core MSCI Japan ETF from iShares and moving it into this new shareholder-friendly index in Japan. It's called the JPX Nikkei 400. And the idea is that this is an index of companies which meet some corporate governance standards. They're, you know, paying out dividends more than the others. And it's quite new, but there's quite a lot of buzz around it. And he just feels better about that. Paul Taylor was holding a real estate ETF. And obviously, that is one area which has not done well. It's not down by that much. It's down by just over 4% in the period I looked at, which is maybe less, you know, than you would think. And clearly, the ETF has had less problems than an open-ended property fund, as we've seen with all of the gatings going on there. But either way, he doesn't feel very comfortable at that anymore. So he's switching out of the iShares MSCI Target UK Real Estate, and he would put that into a REIT instead, which he holds.
Okay, some interesting moves. Colin, there's a view that in times of turbulence, active management is better than passive. But here we have a selection of ETFs doing really well. What do you make of it?
Yeah, I mean, you can't dispute the numbers, and they do all seem to add up. But essentially, if we just look over the last 6 months, we must remember January and February, we had some very low points in the in stock markets globally. So really, any investment over that period has actually done very well. I mean, the FTSE 100 is up 19%. Over the last 6 months itself. So just being in a tracker would have given you a 19% return if you had timed your entry exactly 6 months ago. And of course, we've also got the currency kicker there as well, haven't we? So anything that's held in non-sterling assets will have appreciated quite significantly in the last few weeks. So those numbers are undeniable. Personally, I think this is a great opportunity for active management rather than passive, because I think there's going to be some significant shakeout over the coming weeks and months.
Okay, I suppose on that note then, going forward, do you think passive funds will continue to be a good way for investors to run an income portfolio?
I think it's a very simple way. They'll be okay. But I think it's times like this when active managers are actually able to buy the stocks at a low price, when perhaps sentiment has driven down the price of the market. So we've seen a lot of fund managers buying very low priced equities and particular stocks over the last month while the opportunity was there. And I think actually what we'll see is the active managers seeing the benefit of that, hopefully, as markets pick up and rise over the coming months.
Now, among the best performers in these ETF portfolios were emerging markets funds, which have done very well over the past few months. Do you think emerging markets will continue to do well?
Well, we've got to, again, remember that in 2013 and 14, emerging markets did very, very poorly. So there's a bit of a bounce there. There's a bit of a bounce because of the strengthening of the dollar. And a lot of these countries have currencies that are linked to the dollar. They basically track the dollar. So as the dollar strengthens in comparison with sterling, then emerging market funds will often do very well. I think it's difficult to generalise, but of course, there are opportunities in emerging markets. I think that's always true. However, I would suggest we always remember that we don't invest in countries. Ultimately, you invest in a company, and some of those companies will be in emerging markets. Some of them will be in mainland Europe. Some of them will be in North America, so and further afield as well. So, yeah, I'm sure there will be opportunities in emerging markets.
I'm just thinking about one particular attribute. Do emerging markets provide a good option for British investors at the moment seeking Brexit-resilient investments?
Possibly, but again, my concern is that we may have seen the initial kick. We might have already seen the 15-20% bonus that will give us because of the weakening in sterling. So we're now going to have a reverse issue to contend with, which is that potentially there is a currency risk that you're now taking on board with that. Of course, people have seen the currency benefit, but of course, that could always work the other way. So yes, there will be opportunities in emerging markets. Yes, they could be a good option. But please, you know, bear in mind that there are additional volatilities and risks that will come as a result of that.
Okay, thank you, Colin. Some useful points. Now, this week's Portfolio Clinic features an investor who's aiming for a 4% return from his portfolio, and he seems to be on track to do this. However, he's very concerned about the makeup of his portfolio, and he's also very concerned about missing out on possible investment opportunities. Colin, you reviewed the portfolio. First of all, it's good that people take an interest in their portfolios, but at what point does, let's say, over-interest become detrimental?
That's a really difficult one to answer, because it's just great that people are interested, actually, because I find this a difficult one to answer because I get very excited. I'm a bit boring. I get very excited by everything to do with the investment world. So somebody who is a kindred spirit in that way, I can't criticise them at all. I suppose the only thing that could be an issue is that there might be people who have the skills but maybe don't have the time. And one of the key issues with investment management professionally that we have to deal with for some clients is really just the time of making changes and making alterations and actually focusing on it. If you have the time, then just beware that maybe you don't have the skills and you don't have all the information. And so that would be the only concern I would perhaps flag up.
Okay. Now, what would you say the main mistakes that overzealous investors typically make when running a portfolio?
Well, I think one of the key concerns is, and it can be either extreme, really. One is overtrading. So in other words, chasing something. Or we've just been talking about some significant gains made over the last few months. And to then think that the world will continue in that way. And actually, it rarely does. So just be careful about overtrading, trying to chase returns. And of course, the opposite could also be true, which is undertrading. And how often do we find people who've had the same portfolio for the last 10 or 12 years? They haven't reviewed it, they haven't changed it, and they assume that it will just carry on quite happily. So there we are. I've managed to say both ends of the spectrum. Somewhere in the middle is quite right.
Yeah. And I suppose it'd be fair to say as well that if you every time you trade, unless it's perhaps an open-ended fund on a platform that doesn't charge that, you will get costs.
Costs are
obviously
important.
Also eat into returns. As well.
Absolutely
as investment mistakes.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely right.
Okay. Now, this investor, as well as being quite zealous, had some very strong opinions. He had very strong likes and very strong dislikes on certain types of investments. And one of these was bonds, because he thinks that he will lose capital as interest rates rise. Is this a relevant concern in the current environment?
It is. It is a concern. It's been a concern really since 2008 because obviously early 2009, we saw a significant reduction in interest rates. Base rate has been the same since then. And everyone's concern is that there will be an imminent increase in interest rates. And when that happens, that's reflected in government bonds. And then there's a reflection all the way up the risk scale. And the more risk you have, in other words, the higher yield bonds, then potentially the higher reduction in capital when interest rates rise. So, yes, there is a concern there. The issue is, actually, do we think interest rates could be going up soon? And again, with the referendum result, there seems to be an increased likelihood of lower for longer, as the saying goes, continuing for some time. So if it's a way of having a different type of strategy, then it might be something under consideration.
Okay, taking obviously all these moving parts into consideration, are bond investments a good portfolio inclusion at the moment? And if you do have them in your portfolio, what kind of role would they play in your portfolio?
Right, well, again, there's two different ways in which bond investments could form a part of any individual's portfolio. We tend to recommend them as part of a long-term strategic portfolio. And obviously, the more risk someone has, the lower the holding we would have in bond or fixed income assets. So we tend to use strategic bond funds, and we tend to use strategic bond funds because that gives the manager the facility of moving up and down the risk scale. So on the very low risk end, they can have short-dated government bonds. On the higher end of the risk scale, they could have high-yielding corporate bonds or even bonds held in emerging markets. So they've got the availability of that whole spectrum, and they can move up and down that spectrum as they see fit. So I think strategically, that's very helpful. Again, you might also think that tactically, you might want to hold some corporate bonds just as a way of taking risk off the table. And I was just looking up a couple of short-dated corporate bonds that you could use as a way of almost holding instead of cash. It's not the same as cash, has more risk. It's very important to just stress that. But short-dated corporate bonds, AXA offer a short-dated corporate bond, Threadneedle, a UK short-dated corporate bond. And those are ways in which perhaps you might want to hold funds that aren't held in equities, but perhaps aren't there for the long term. So, you know, you might be wanting to move them into equities on a future occasion. So as a tactical holding, they can be quite helpful as well.
Okay, you mentioned strategic bond funds. Which strategic bond funds do you particularly like?
Strategic bond funds are a huge universe now. Once upon a time, there was a handful of funds and it was very straightforward. Now it's much more complicated. So funds that we've recommended over recent weeks and months would be ones that are quite different. So the Legal & General Dynamic Bond Trust is a great fund. If you think the world could go into a very steep decline, that manager is holding in a way that is quite unique. Although in a similar way, Rathbone Ethical Bond Fund is structured in a slightly unusual way as well. And we quite like the way that they manage things. And the other one that's a bit more mainstream, has a very, very big fund and has just done extremely well for a long time, is the Henderson Strategic Bond Fund. So there's three different ones there. There's lots of others on the market that are well worth looking into. And then you might also want to be thinking about global bonds as well, although, again, they've had a big bounce because of currency. Marlborough Global Bond Fund is one that we've recommended recently too. So, yeah, there's lots of availability on the marketplace. Again, it just depends whether you're after yield and an income or whether you're looking for a total return strategy.
Okay. On the subject of income, how good are bonds and bond funds against areas such as equity income and property at the moment as a source of income? Are bonds the best way to get income?
Yeah, I would say they're not the best way, but I would say that they are an absolutely important constituent part of any portfolio. There's very few of my clients who don't have any bonds, and they know that therefore that increases the risk on their portfolio. Yeah, it does it in different ways. I totally understand that. And I think strategic bonds are just a way in which you can get rid of some of those issues and hand them over to a manager for them to sort out the problems on your behalf. And I think it works very well.
On that note, do you like ETFs as a way to invest in bonds? Because you're talking about, obviously, strategic bonds are very, very active, but we have just been talking about these portfolios and the bond ETFs, they have done well.
They have done well.
Yeah.
They have done well. I think they've done well because of this lower for longer story. I think the issue would come if that was to change, that you may need to start moving up and down the risk scale. And if you're holding an ETF, you would have to do that yourself and to know when to do it and what to move to. They have done very well, and you cannot dispute the figures, as we were saying earlier. But I'm going to play devil's advocate here and say that very few people have the skills to get the timing right. And the potential losses, although corporate bonds can be a nice, safe place, they can also be a very scary place, and suddenly they can flip and just make a very rapid change. That happened actually earlier in the year when assets were very closely correlated between equities and fixed income assets. And there was a reasonably sharp decline in fixed income values. That's bounced back. But I just think that's one reason why we like to use strategic bond funds in our client portfolios.
Turning back to the reader and this general subject of how to access them, he's actually directly holding some of the very small number of corporate bonds that private investors can buy off the London Stock Exchange. Is this a good way to get exposure to bonds, or what would you suggest?
Yeah, I'm going to refer the honourable listener to the answer I gave earlier, really. I personally, I just feel that we feel more comfortable using strategic bonds. I would just say, though, however, if you're buying gilts or very few available corporate bonds, to hold them to redemption, there is some sense in that. Trading them, though, can become difficult.
Yeah.
Trading them can become difficult, mainly due to liquidity. It can be really hard even for bond fund managers to trade bonds. So for the private individual to trade them can be really quite tough.
Yeah, I think it would be fair to say, isn't it? I mean, there are a really small number available, and you're not going to have anything like the diversity or choice
Absolutely.
That an institutional manager running a bond fund would.
Yeah. Or even, as you say, within an ETF, you have a huge range of bonds represented within those ETFs.
So that normal people can't go out and buy.
So you are getting diversification just in the way in which you're buying into those bond funds.
Yeah, okay. Thanks, Colin. Some really useful suggestions. And do check out the funds section of next week's Investors Chronicle, because we're going to have an in-depth assessment of bond funds in that. Now, an area which has taken a bit of a beating since the vote for Brexit has been UK-listed small and mid-cap companies. But Gervais Williams, a fund manager who runs a number of funds, including Diverse Income Trust, which we count among our IC Top 100 funds, says investors shouldn't assume that all of this segment of the market is highly exposed to the domestic economy, and also that smaller companies have more opportunities to grow their sales and profits. Colin, would you agree with this? And do you think investors at the moment should be allocated to UK small and mid-caps?
I do totally agree. I mean, certainly someone with the knowledge, experience and performance record of Gervais is somebody definitely worth listening to. He would have researched his funds. He would have researched his stocks. So I would listen to what he has to say. And yeah, I think investors should be allocated to every aspect of the market. And I think, again, using funds that are multi-cap, so in other words, they can go from everything from small cap, mid cap, right the way through to large cap, investing in managers who can invest in that way just gives a greater diversification.
But there's always a flip side. So obviously there's the issue of Brexit, but you know, what are some of the other main risks of UK small and mid caps just now?
Well, of course, the thing with small caps and mid caps is that they've had a very good run. Mm. And again, we were talking earlier about how emerging markets had a tough time in 14 and 15. And really, it was the reverse for small and mid caps. They had an exceptionally good time. And really, any manager who was invested in the core element of small and mid cap markets, particularly mid cap, did extremely well over the last couple of years. And they were the ones who got hurt the most after the referendum result, really. So what are the risks? Well, obviously, smaller companies, smaller than the big companies, then often brings in higher levels of volatility. But there is that famous saying that elephants don't gallop. Well, it's famous. I think it's famous, which really just says that large-sized businesses rarely increase in size dramatically, rarely grow fast. And that's why often people would argue that the engine of the UK economy is actually the mid-cap market.
OK. And how much of a risk to these do you think Brexit is?
Well, actually, I think we could be about to see a significant increase in M&A and takeovers, mergers and acquisitions. Mm. We've seen that in the last week with the acquisition of Arm by a Japanese firm. And with the sterling assets now, effectively every sterling asset has been devalued by 15 to 20%. And I think what we're going to see is significant foreign takeovers, and probably that will really be obvious in that mid-250 market. So there may be a great opportunity to see a significant takeout of some probably very good businesses. I think, you know, some fund managers will be disappointed to lose them. But I think if we're looking at total returns to clients, it may give some very strong returns.
Now, you were saying that you think that multi-cap funds are probably the best way to approach UK equities. So what particular multi-cap funds would you suggest? We've obviously been speaking about Diverse Income Trust, which invests across the market spectrum, but does seem to have a bit of a bias, the smaller side of it. Yeah. But are there any others that you'd like to highlight?
Yeah, well, again, a couple that we've been looking at recently. So Liontrust Special Situations is a very good fund with a very good long-term track record, but again, exceptionally good at being able to spread right the way across the market capitalisation spectrum, which is very helpful. One way in which you get specific allocation to small and mid-cap is the Franklin UK Managers Focus Fund now. That's because it's effectively divided into four, and a small cap manager gets 25%, or broadly, mid-cap 25, large-cap 25, and then they get the best of everything in the other 25, which is just an interesting way of getting into the market, really, into different ways. Or again, something like Threadneedle UK Select, which again is quite a concentrated portfolio, 30, 35 stocks, and that's right the way across the top 350 companies in the UK.
Okay, some really useful suggestions there. And you can read our full update on Diverse Income Trust in this week's issue of Investors Chronicle. That brings us to the end of this week's podcast, so it just remains to thank Colin Lowe, Managing Director of King Street Wealth, and Kate Bealey, Deputy Personal Finance Editor at Investors Chronicle. You can read more on our income ETF portfolios, asset allocation and equity income in this week's issue of Investors Chronicle and the website. Thank you for listening and have a good weekend.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.